So I'm Carl Selke. I've supported looking at bringing technology into wargaming and the wargaming community for about 10 years now, particularly for the Office of the Secretary of Defense Cost Analysis and Program Evaluation Division, which is sort of the chief analytic organization of the Secretary of Defense. So it's their go-to if they want an analysis. And also more recently for the Marine Corps. What I'm going to focus on today is a software engine that I designed about 10 years ago. But before I get there, I just want to say that the Defense War Game Repository, the U.S. Defense War Game Repository, came up the other day, and I happened to be the technical lead for that. And I got an interesting phone call in 2015, and it was from some analyst at CAPE saying, "Hey, we have a couple hours. We have to put together this repository for the Deputy Secretary of Defense. What do we do? What's a war game? Where do we look?" Because they were handing it to professional software developers that didn't know anything about wargaming. And I said, "Well, that's a terrible idea. It just sounds like a terrible idea. How are you going to do the care and feeding of this thing over time?" And then, interestingly enough, a couple weeks later, I was in the Four Stars office briefing him on the status. So I'm not sure what happened there. I want to talk a little bit about this Swift tool. So I'm going to kind of tell a little story about how it got the motivation for it. Swift is a computer-assisted platform that is designed for turn-based games. Particularly, it's been used throughout DoD now for a number of years. And also, Distal, I think, is looking at bringing it in. But why the computer? So I'm going to talk a little bit about analytic wargaming. The analyst, I'm often in this situation where you're the poor sop that has to take the notes during the game, and what just happened. If anyone can relate to that, let me know. But this is a common phenomenon. And arriving in the mid 2000s on the DoD scene, there were no tools to help. We had PowerPoint. I had war games with 400 PowerPoint slides. No one's ever going to look at those again. From my hobby perspective, and this ties into the role that hobby gaming has had, well, I use lots of different tools. So I'm like, from a hobby side, but in DoD, nope, can't use anything like that. But this was supposed to be the premier analytical organization within the department, so I thought that was rather strange. So we pitched the idea in about 2009 on doing the Swift tool, and I was informed by a couple different things. AD Camp, I'd used that in college. Cyberboard, Vassal, these kind of play-by-email systems that you use to take your board game and represent it. And most of them were somewhat tedious to use, but it was better than nothing if you wanted to play over a distant game, or you wanted a representation with a little bit more dynamic nature to it. The other thing that was occurring around this time is a certain book came out called Simulating War. Dr. Sabin, I think, was the guy. In the first chapter, and I think I saw him brief at a Connections. He comes out, with some of the pros and cons of computer-assisted wargaming. And he mentions this design accessibility, the manual game having that design accessibility, and the computer being a frigid, fragile, takes too long to do sort of system. So what we approached it from, I took that design accessibility concept and said that is our core requirement. So we're going to build this tool that has that in it to as much as we can imagine. And if you think about tools like R and what they enable for the analyst, you think about development environments like NetBeans that enable computer programmers, or Civilization II scenario editors for hobbyists. It's such an empowering feature. So what we wanted, what the vision behind Swift was to become that sort of PowerPoint tool. Like, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the medium. I want the medium just to be there. I want it to work and move along. So a little bit about Swift. It is software that's owned and managed by the U.S. government. What we're trying to do first is create a generic environment. So it is a game engine. So it doesn't know anything about the military. What it does do is it exposes the ontology of a game, and it does so in sort of functional ways. So are you using the computer just for visualization? Do I just need a multi-dimensional environment from which to explore. Do I want to record the data that the players, the actions that the players take within the simulation as they go along? Or do I want to do something, a little bit more standard with adjudication and that sort of thing? So, from a Swift perspective, you can use it to support a game in multiple ways. It doesn't have to be the sole focus, of the game. And we enabled this design accessibility primarily through this ontology of a game. So we had to break down, what are the elements of a game that you have to expose to people in order to capture their game design? And then create a system that allows them to play that out, to analyze it, et cetera. So created on the left, this list of things that we thought were encapsulated enough of that design accessibility. Recording, as I mentioned, the 400 PowerPoint slides, we really wanted to get away from that. So, as part of our design, everything is captured. You can make game structure changes during the game; those are captured. Every action that's taken is captured. We wanted to prevent that black box effect by exposing everything, and we wanted the ability to replay. And a good story with that is, I was at a game. It was a big Title 10 exercise. There were hundreds of people there. The analyst, we came in with the Swift tool to capture the game result, to capture what was going on in the game. So we did that. We found out that they made some mistakes. They had maybe 60 more Joint Strike Fighters in the theater than they should have, which changed the course of the game. Not that that was wrong, but it was not consistent with the TIFFID. And there were many other situations like that during these kind of large game. So what we did is we came back and we replayed the game with a much smaller group, cultivated the data a little bit more, and then you could move that towards, informing the next game, bettering the insights, that kind of thing. From a visualization perspective, I was always frustrated with PowerPoint and that it wasn't multidimensional. I wanted something that was a GIS-like, GIS-light system that could handle the spatial complexity, the temporal complexity, as well as just what things are doing on the board. So, people would say, well, we can just use PowerPoint for that. And from a multidimensional data perspective, you cannot just use PowerPoint for that, or it's gonna take you 400 slides to do it. But from the Swift side, we wanted to address that visualization problem of saying, hey, if there's a SAG there, what are the properties? You wanted to be able to add the data to the system to allow that to explore and advance the game. Real quick, I'm going to go through the from a Swift perspective, its value in each of these steps. I'm focusing primarily on execution, but as once you start involving the computer, things are far left of bang, right? From the design perspective, this is the designer perspective from Swift. This is the nuts and bolts. It's similar to the analog process. What's your map going to look like? What kind of layers of information do you need? What's your unit? So you build all that. You're putting together a puzzle based upon the game design that you have in your head. Using Swift, as we often would tell some of the more naive defense folks, it's not going to give you a good game design just by using a computer, right? That's not going to happen. But what it can do is it can structure your thinking, because you're always thinking about what do you want the players to do and what do you need to show them to allow them to do that. So two key questions. And from the player side, once they engage, they have to be able to navigate the space, they have to be able to select units to take actions. And what we've noticed is that the simplest as possible, so you can get the player functions to be, the better off you are. And from the analytics side, you have to, suddenly the world explodes with RFIs. I can't tell you how many RFIs we get during the game. Now that you have a computer system, can you tell us this? Can you tell us this? Can you tell us this? Well, yeah, we could, but that takes a lot more time. But what that does do is it allows you to evolve both your playable model of war and your player experience at the same time. So you kind of grow, as you play. So from a Swift perspective, every game is a play test. As we go around and think about, adjudication during the execution, Swift was designed with this idea of you have a lot of opinions, you have a lot, you have a response surface of results. It came out of the irregular warfare world where you have that diversity of opinion, you also can have a diversity of models or tools or adjudicators or, you know, that kind of thing. We wanted to capture them all as suggested outcomes and then allow the, you know, kernel in the room to make that final, you know, determination on ground truth. Just an example of the Swift interface where you just can go in at any time and change whatever you want, you know, as the adjudicator during the game, and that's logged. From an execution perspective, we've had a lot of success with local networks. So you can separate people in different rooms, run some cords, and now you have hidden information, you have players, you know, with multiple monitors. But the big point that I can't make is that you've reduced this, and I'll come back to this again, is you've reduced things to a viewport. And you have to be able to expand that out. Otherwise, you know, you're gonna lose quite a bit. So swift or slow, you know, some of the critiques that we often run into and some of the weaknesses, you know, of, I think, computer-assisted wargaming, computers in particular, you know, people compare it to commercial software all the time. And I keep reminding them that we're in the Defense Department, but you know, Command Ops 2 being a great example of that participatory simulation. You have a lot of agent logic going on there. The warfighter wants to be able to sit back and watch things play out. Oh, like, move this to the left. You know, they want to be the general. From the analyst side, you know, I have simulations that can do that. What I'm interested in is eliciting the warfighter, what they themselves would do in these different roles. But that inevitable comparison with commercial software and wait times and all these things we constantly run into. And that's tied too with the problem of automating. You know, there's this desire, but particularly from the analyst, to have data perfection. You know, you want data to traverse the space of your game. You know, everything has to be perfect. And no, it really doesn't. You know, from a visualization side, you know, using Swift, it's like, well, what do you want them to actually see? Because they don't. The tool doesn't have to hold all the data. So you get into this. You know, what do you want people to? What kind of data do you want to store? How large is this game going to be? And how much do you automate? If it takes me 5 seconds to just move the piece and it takes, you know, a developer 3 weeks to program that same logic, you know, what's the cost benefit? And technology is your friend or foe, usually both. You now introduce uncertainty in the moving of a piece from one place to another, whereas on the, you know, the analog mode, I pick it up and I move it. What if it breaks? You know, so it introduces, you know, the play testing, the time constraints required quite significantly on the game. However, once you do it once, once you get it right once, you now have something that you can repeat and use again and again. So that's, you know, if we think back to that R thing, you know, once that package on how to do a regression is developed and tested, well, we'll continue to do those regressions. You know, returning back to the trials and tribulations and the, you know, thinking about a computer-assisted tool, you know, over time, it's not, you know, from our perspective, it's not any benefit of any particular game. It's over the course of, you know, years that we're looking to influence it. And we had the usual, this is interesting in a couple ways, one of which matches the funding profile that we had, where you get a lot of initial funding around the idea. You don't necessarily get to pick your own team. People have unrealistic expectations. And then, you know, things kind of fall away. People lose interest. But there's a couple reasons, and I'll get to it in a second as I close, on why we are on this upward trend. So if we look at the technology adoption life cycle, you know, there's that chasm there where many tools just fail and die out and you never hear about them again. You know, a couple reasons why we overcame that. One is, you know, you have a committed champion, and that makes a big difference. But in order to get that, you have a committed team of people that, regardless of what job they're in, they're continuing to pursue this state-of-the-art in wargaming push, you know, through this software. So we've had a committed team for quite a while. And the other aspect is it's been trial by fire. So we've failed more times than I can count. We've had our nose bloody more times than I can count from a tool perspective. But what that allows us to do is, over the years, you know, we've played games with Ed McGrady, Peter Perella, you know, Center for Army Analysis, the Marine Corps, all over the Defense Department. So you encounter their challenges, their wants, their desires, and that shapes and informs the tool as you go along. And you just get better and better. Okay, I've exhausted my 15 minutes, so thank you very much.
Right, thank you, John.